On this episode of the ASC Podcast with John Gailey, we check in on the status of the 2019 CMS proposed ASC regulations, discuss the latest hit piece about ASCs in the USA Today and Kaiser Health News, discuss bed bugs, and in our focus segment, discuss the discharge process. As always, we also discuss the latest ASC news and upcoming ASC-related events.
Welcome to the ASC Podcast with John Gailey, a bi-weekly podcast for anyone interested in the freestanding ambulatory surgery industry. This episode is sponsored by Ambulatory Healthcare Strategies. The ASC regulatory environment is increasingly challenging, but organizations that outsource their regulatory oversight to Ambulatory Healthcare Strategies have an edge. AHS works with ASCs to oversee their quality improvement, risk management, emergency and infection control programs, run their meetings, develop education programs, and always be prepared for surveys. Welcome to episode 33 of the ASC Podcast with John Gailey for Monday, August 20th, 2018. Recording from our new studio in Rochester, New York, this is Sue Cronkite, Senior Nurse Consultant with AHS. I'm here with John Gailey, the author of over 10 books about the ASC industry, published through Eden Group Development, a nationally known speaker on all aspects of the industry, and the owner of Ambulatory Healthcare Strategies, which provides regulatory oversight services to ambulatory surgery centers throughout the United States. So we are in our new studio. I love it. We used to record in our dining room, and now we're in our office, studio office.
And a dual purpose. This is fantastic.
Yeah.
Of course, Now we used to record across the kitchen or the dining room table from each other. Now we're sitting next to each other, a little bit different, but it's a little bit more permanent. I guess now we really are permanent podcast hosts.
Yes.
Here. No going back now that we've modified our office to include a studio. So I thought I'd give a little bit of a podcast update to our listeners. As of today, we have over 3,800 downloads. That's 3,800 downloads. Yeah. Very proud of that. People are obviously listening regularly, which we appreciate. Our most popular episodes, Sue, are about infection prevention, about ASCA 2018. And interestingly, we did an episode on leadership, and that happened to be one of our popular episodes. So that's something we're going to do a little bit of follow-up very shortly on, too. So I think that's great. And of course, as our listeners know by now, we have moved to a bi-weekly format, which I think has improved listenership. I think probably a weekly was a little bit too much for our listeners, certainly a little bit too much for you and I.
Yeah,
it's been nice. Now we have a little bit more of our weekends. Mm-hmm. We are also very exciting. We're actually working with a number of sponsors. We have three new sponsors coming on board shortly, and that will help bring some interesting new content. And then we're going to be starting that after the summer, which of course is very soon. August 20th.
Yeah, hard to believe.
And as always, we deeply appreciate all the feedback that we've been getting from our loyal listeners. Sue, you and I are way behind in our premium podcasts.
We are.
So luckily, we just hired a new technician to help us with the podcast. So now maybe you and I don't have to do all of the post-editing also. The editing,
yep. That should help.
So that'll definitely hopefully solve some of our time issues. And I think a lot of this is right now. I know everybody is kind of busy, you know, with things in the summertime. Things tend to slow down a little bit in the ASC industry, not much. But so I think as we get into the fall, things will really pick up again. And we'll probably be able to get a couple of those premium podcasts off the ground like we've promised. So let's start with the news.
Okay. So ASCA has responded to the proposed 2019 CMS rulemaking. that we've been discussing for the past two episodes.
And Bill Prentice actually had he's a CEO of ASC Association, and he responded on their website, which is ASCAssociation.org, to a series of questions about the proposed regulations. And I wanted to quote a few things, Sue, that Bill pointed out. Mm-hmm. And he said, "The changes proposed in this year's rule are among the most significant I have seen in my 8 years with ASCA." Again, this is Bill speaking. Mm-hmm. "Overall, I would say that they demonstrate greater recognition of the quality and value that ASCs provide than we have seen in any previous rulemaking. For example, foremost among the proposed changes is a decision to update ASC payments using the hospital market basket inflation factor, which is a much more realistic indicator of rising costs in the ASC space than what CMS had been using. And the ASC Association has fought for this change in the last decade, and we are appreciative to see that it is included." So Bill agrees with us, I think, certainly. we've been saying that this has been a significant change. We had two episodes. Those episodes have been very popular, by the way. We have a lot of listeners that have been listening to it, and I think one of the things that has been nice is we were able to get up there right after the regulations were released
right quickly.
So Bill also talked about the proposed changes to the Medicare quality measures, saying, and this is great, I love his quote, "The rationale that CMS is using to justify elimination of ASC 1, 2, 3, and 4 is that the results have topped out," which is the term used to indicate that positive performance on these measures is so consistently high that CMS sees almost no room for improvement and no reason to continue measuring them. So again, like we mentioned, they're getting rid of it because it's not showing any problems. It's showing very high quality. I'm concerned that, you know, with all the talk about not having a lot of quality measures, that taking away some of these might have a negative effect, or at least we wouldn't be able to point to these measures as showing high quality. Just the fact that they're getting rid of them because they've consistently shown high quality should be a good indicator. As we talked about in the last episode, the ASC data is so good that continuing to measure something that doesn't help improve quality is just not useful. So again, that's what really the conclusion that comes out of this. Bill also noted about the other measures that we are grateful that CMS has agreed with the concerns that ASCA and the ASC community have expressed originally about them. That is that those measures were not really related to quality and therefore not appropriate for a good quality reporting program. Mm-hmm. And lastly, responding to the need for more meaningful quality measures, Bill noted, "While we are grateful for these changes, we continue to believe that patients deserve more information about the quality of care they receive in all settings and look forward to working with CMS staff to develop more meaningful measures that provide actionable data for patients, providers, and regulators about outpatient procedures."
Mm-hmm. Well, just like people do in their own centers, you know, when you're looking for a quality improvement study, you want to focus on something that you feel you really can improve, that you've maybe noted a problem or something like that. So they can focus on the things that they can actually do something about or study something, find out there isn't a problem as they've done here, and be able to let those things go.
Right. If you want to see all of Bill's comments about the proposed regulations, please visit ASCAssociation.org, and please consider becoming a member of the ASC Association, the nation's only organization looking out for the interests of the country's 5,500 ambulatory surgery centers. The ASC Podcast with John Gailey and the ASC Association encourage ASCs to provide feedback on the proposed regulations by going to the CMS website, and we'll provide a link on our webpage for this episode, which is at ASCPodcast.com. So if you want to make comments about it to CMS, just follow the links on our ASCPodcast.com website.
Yeah, I think specifically one thing they were mentioning is the reviewing of what procedures can be done in the centers. So although ASCA is going to give an overview of what they think, they want some specific information if people have noticed, you know, a trend in their centers of things that have gone well or that haven't gone well, and really want some specific information.
From the people that are actually doing this, from the doctors.
Exactly.
Exactly. So USA Today and the Kaiser Health Network are at it again. So since our last episode, they published another hit piece about the ASC industry, this time with the salacious title, "Surgery Centers Don't Have to Report Deaths in 17 States," implying little or no oversight in much of the country, and not even talking about how this compares to hospital reporting requirements.
Same kind of problem as they had the last time. They just point out certain things. They find some awful tragic stories, but no context at all.
Right. They kind of imply that hospitals have a higher level of regulation than surgery centers done, which we certainly know as healthcare regulatory consultants is certainly not the case. I really don't want to do this article any more justice here by going into details about the factual errors in the article, but I will note that they call it an investigative report, but there are certainly was no balance in this article at all. For example, it doesn't talk about how ASC oversight compares to the hospital oversight, or does it talk about whether some states, even the hospitals, don't have to report deaths. So It was poorly researched, poorly written, and thankfully, as a result of the poor research and writing, pretty much ignored. So it's gained no traction at all. Yeah. Nonetheless, our patients might be reading these articles and they might have some concerns.
We did an episode on this issue when the first hit piece by these same reporters came out in March. So if you want more information, go to episode 10 for March 10th, 2018. Also, we did an interview with a publicist in episode 29 for July 9th, 2018, if you want some information and advice just how to handle any questions.
Yes, I think we recorded that in the New Jersey Association. She did a great job. The publicist talked in general about, you know, how to deal with this, but also more specific things about how to get the message, the good message out about ambulatory surgery centers. So I don't think we have to spend too much time talking about this. Fortunately, it doesn't seem to have gone anywhere. Okay, let's take a break, and we'll in our focus segment, we're going to talk about the discharge process.
For this week's focus segment, we discuss the discharge process. John, you've been working with a number of clients lately about some discharge planning issues, so we decided to discuss this area in detail for our focus segment.
That's correct. This last week, we had a number of clients call us about various issues around, especially that whole issue of the responsible adult, which is the third part of this. So I've thought maybe this is a good thing to talk about the entire discharge process from a CMS regulatory standpoint. So why don't you start with the actual regulation?
Okay, so CMS regulation 416.52C1 is about discharge. It says the ASC must provide each patient with written discharge instructions and overnight supplies. When appropriate, make a follow-up appointment with the physician and ensure that all patients are informed either in advance of their surgical procedure or prior to leaving the ASC of their prescriptions, post-operative instructions, and physician contact information for follow-up care.
So, and then CMS also provides interpretive guidelines for this, which basically state that each patient or the adult who accompanies the patient upon discharge must be provided with written discharge instructions. Either before the surgery or before discharge, each patient must be provided with the prescriptions they'll need to fill associated with the recovery from surgery. And then the written instructions that specify actions the individual should take in the immediate postoperative timeframe, the post-discharge period, to promote their recovery from the surgery, and any warning signs of complications to be alert for. And then it also needs to indicate how to contact the physician who provide follow-up care to the patient. When appropriate, the ASC must make an appointment with the physician for follow-up care. And the ASC must also provide supplies such as gauze, bandages, etc., sufficient for the patient's needs through the first night after the surgery. So, as a surveyor, what we're looking for here is really very detailed written discharge instructions. And more importantly, that these discharge instructions need to be personalized to the physician and hopefully personalized to the procedure that was being performed. And so one of the things that I think you and I have been impressed with, we visited a place a couple weeks ago where they really spend really the pre-op time doing most of the discharge instructions and then just kind of recap it when they get to the discharge itself. Because by that point, the patient, especially if they've had anesthesia, you know, doesn't have, you know, much capacity at that point to be able to really take all that stuff in.
Yeah. And it gives them a chance to do a little pre-planning if you talk about what it's going to be like afterwards.
Right. Right.
You know, they can get that. And as you said, be able to listen to it when they're feeling a little clear-headed,
right,
and having it all in writings. Because even in the best of circumstances, you know, you're trying to listen to what they say, but you get home and you forget. You have to have everything really clearly written.
And I actually have a personal story here on this. You know, a couple weeks ago, I had to take my daughter in for surgery, my youngest daughter. And then after the procedure was done, they were giving instructions to me. Kristen, my youngest daughter, you know, was, of course, still under the effects of anesthesia. She wasn't listening too much. And the nurse was actually giving just very detailed instructions. And I said, can I see this in writing?
Yeah.
So she had actually failed. She gave the instructions in writing to Kristen in the office before the surgery. And, you know, I asked Kristen, do you know where these things are? And she had no idea. Yeah. So this was just a very good point. I mean, I think most of our surgery centers know this, but I was very specific. I went to her and I said, I need a copy of those instructions because, you know, I might be a pretty smart guy, but, you know, there were more than two steps there, and I want to make sure I got it right. So
yeah, so even if you're covering it before surgery, make sure you also give them something when they leave, because you just have to make sure nothing's been lost or changed.
Especially if the person that came with the patient wasn't there to hear the preoperative instructions beforehand. So
the second section that we want to talk about is 416.52C2. That states that the ASC must ensure each patient has a discharge order signed by the physician who performed the surgery or procedure in accordance with applicable state health and safety laws, standards of practice, and ASC policy.
So this is a very important change or a new interpretation that came out a couple years ago. It used to be that if the anesthesiologist signed off on the patient leaving the surgery center, that would be enough. But in the interpretive guidelines now, it's very specific that no patient may be discharged from the ASC unless the physician who performed the surgery or procedure signs a discharge order. So the ASC must ensure that physicians follow applicable state laws as well as generally accepted standards of practice and the ASC policy when determining that a patient has recovered sufficiently from surgery and may be discharged from the ASC. Mm-hmm. Or, of course, if they can't be discharged and end up having to go to another level of care, such as a hospital. So the interpretive guidelines do state, though, that it is permissible for the operating physician to write a discharge order indicating the patient may be discharged when stable or when they meet the discharge criteria. So that's how we get away from this. So if a surgeon finishes the procedure and right after the procedure is done, everything has gone well, they can write a discharge order that says the patient may be discharged when they the patient meets the discharge orders or when they're stable.
Okay. And who decides when they're stable?
And that, like if it was a patient that underwent anesthesia, it's usually going to be the anesthesiologist that decides that. It could be, and again, following the rules here, that the nurse will, if the patient didn't receive any anesthesia, it had local only, the nurse, following the protocols of the organization, can determine that the patient has met all those that criteria for discharge. So that can still be done. But most likely, if you're dealing with a patient that has had anesthesia, it's going to be the anesthesiologist that will finally say that they can leave. But the discharge order still needs to be there from the operating surgeon. The interpretive guidelines also have this odd paragraph that says, it is expected that a patient will actually leave the ASC within 15 to 30 minutes of the time when the physician signs the discharge order or when he or she was found to be stable, whichever happens later. They added that last line, or when he or she is found to be stable, whichever happens later, to avoid some problems that we had when that wasn't clarified, where surgeons were really having to come out and, you know, look at the patient again, or the surgeon that performed the procedure, look at the patient again, just so that they met that 15 to 30 minutes. So that really has, that last sentence has negated all of that.
And the third one we want to talk about is 416.52C3, which states the ASC must ensure all patients are discharged in the company of a responsible adult, except those patients exempted by the attending physician. And I know, as you mentioned earlier, this is one that can be problematic sometimes.
It is. And this has been quite an issue lately. Especially, we do a lot of work in New York City, and transportation down there is a problem. And also GI centers tend to have a problem with this, with the older population, that sometimes these patients do not have somebody immediately available to take care of them.
Yeah, and it's an important rule, because you do want somebody that can keep an eye on them. But like you said, it's just in the real world, sometimes it's very difficult. So,
well, and especially, I mean, it's bad enough, you know, out in the country, you know, like we live out in the country, you know, there's long distances between, you know, there isn't even reliable public transportation between home and the average surgery center here where we live. And that would be probably the greater part of the United States. So, you know, you really do have to have somebody else to drive them. But in the city, I find it's even just as important there, you know, because even though public transportation might be available, you still need to have somebody responsible for making sure that patient gets home safely. If they're taking public transportation or a cab or something like that, they're not going to be fully in control of their faculties if they've had anesthesia.
Yeah, and make sure that whoever is with them, you know, as you said, when you had Kristen, you wanted to listen to the discharge orders.
Right.
You wanted those papers. You wanted to make sure that those got home with you.
That's right.
And that's so difficult if it's not actually a loved one.
Right, right. So this has become it's becoming even more of an issue. We've been working working with many of our clients to try to develop some policies on that. The rules do state, it says at the end, except those patients exempted by the attending physician. So unfortunately, that tends to be where we get involved, because the physicians will just say, well, first of all, can I just, you know, blanket exempt everybody? And the interpretive guidelines actually state specifically, exemptions must be specific to individual patients, not blanket exemptions for a whole class of patients. So the answer to that, quite simply, doctor, is that you cannot do a blanket exemption for everybody. Mm-hmm. And we have to be very careful about doing this exemption. So the exemption has to be specific to the patient and specific to the situation. And there needs to be some documentation in the record that the patient has specifically indicated that this patient is eligible for discharge without a family member. And of course, the surgery center and the doctor are taking on some significant legal risk here in discharging that patient with this type of exemption. So they need to be very careful about this. Not so much a regulatory issue, but now we're talking about a medical legal issue here. If you discharge a patient and say that they don't have to have a responsible adult, and then they get into an auto accident, or they have some type of a problem in public transportation, or something happens and they're not able to communicate to the cab driver as to where they're going, I can come up with a million scenarios that are not good here. So you need to have a good plan. So I can't interpret every single situation that our listeners will have, but you need to spend some significant time thinking about this and how you're going to handle those situations. Quite frankly, the easiest way to handle it is not allow it at all. And many of our surgery centers have gotten to that point where you show up without a family member, you're just not going to have the surgery done. Especially with our GI patients. And, that works. Once you kind of push a patient and say, you've got to have a responsible adult, they usually end up finding somebody, especially if that procedure really needs to be done. Lastly, in the survey procedures section of the interpretive guidelines, they talk about how a surveyor is going to survey this. Yeah. And this is what they say. The surveyor must do a medical records review and to identify for each patient the responsible adult who will accompany the patient after discharge, or alternatively, a specific exemption for this patient from the requirement by the physician. So they are going to look at the medical record. They're going to want to see the name of the responsible adult that did come in with that patient. It needs to be documented in the record. And hopefully that person will also sign off on the discharge documentation. And then the surveyors are also required to observe whether the ASC ensures an adult accompanies the patient's discharge while the survey is taking place, unless the patient has been specifically exempted from this requirement. So they're going to actually observe a discharge to see that this is occurring. So they are taking it seriously. We're watching, as a surveyor myself, I'm watching for these things because we know this is a hot topic right now. Okay, let's take a short break here to talk about the wonderful services from Ambulatory Healthcare Strategies, and then we'll come back for our last segment. And we're going to talk, Sue, we're going to talk about bed bugs.
Okay. So, John, there is a lot going on with Ambulatory Healthcare Strategies. Can you give our listeners an update on the company and its services?
Sure. Well, as you well know, we are growing fast. We now have 10 employees. You were number 9. We've since hired another summer intern, though I guess it's going to be a fall intern, actually, now. all of our employees are scattered throughout the East Coast with a cadre of independent consultants that we call upon when we need them. And probably one of the most exciting news that we've had recently is Alex Bornham, our Director of Operations and our go-to guy for life safety issues, passed his NFPA certification and became a CLSS-HC. Which stands for Certified Life Safety Specialist for Healthcare. So we're now offering life safety surveys, which is something somewhat new to us, and are included in all of our retainers.
So what is a retainer?
So the core of our business is really retainer-based services. While we regularly help centers out with mock surveys, survey preparation, and post-survey mitigation, the core of what we do is make sure that you don't have to prepare for a survey or deal with the complex post-survey plans of correction. To that end, we have a regulatory compliance retainer, which is basically a way for centers to outsource quality improvement, risk management, infection control, emergency preparedness, and other CMS and accreditation oversight services.
And what is included in that retainer?
While all of our services can be tailored to the exact needs of the organization, our standard retainer includes either monthly or quarterly visits to the center, review of all quality improvement, risk management, infection control, and emergency services activities and documentation, preparation for attendance at and preparation of the minutes for the quality improvement meeting, the medical executive meeting, and the governing body meetings. annual updates to the policy and procedure manual to comply with state CMS and accreditation requirements. We also prepare educational programs for orientation and annual mandatory education, and we can actually do those educational programs too if you wish. And of course, 24/7 access to me and my incredible staff for issues that might come up.
Well, that sounds expensive.
Well, I think the price might surprise many of our listeners. But the way you have to look at it is this: how can you afford not to? Many of our centers simply cannot afford or cannot find an administrator that has all of the education, training, and experience to handle quality improvement, risk management, emergency services, and infection control. And our service allows centers to hire good nurse managers that can focus on those things that they're best trained for, and we handle the rest.
So how do our listeners learn more about this?
Well, feel free to give me a call at 585-594-1167. That's 585-594-1167, or send us an email at info@ah-strategies.com. That's info@ah-strategies.com. So, Sue, it's been an interesting couple weeks here since we last did the podcast, and we have noticed an issue lately with, of all things, bed bugs in some of our ASCs, so thought maybe it'd be wise for us to talk a little bit about it.
Yep, so no actual infestations have been identified yet in any of our centers, but, you know, they're having some concerns with people that come in that they think might have some problems at home, and of course, that raises the possibility of spreading the infestation, so we know that bed bug problems are increasing, especially in the Northeast, and most especially in highly populated areas such as New York City. We suggest that you educate your staff on what to look for. Patients with insect bites, usually they're seen when they're bed bugs on the arms and the shoulders. They'll usually be in kind of a straight line. They should be itchy. They sometimes can become irritated or infected. Fortunately, though, bed bugs are not thought to transmit human diseases. So they aren't dangerous. They're very easy to spread around and to really get a place infested. So,
and I guess they don't jump, right?
No, they don't jump. So, they can get around pretty well, though. They kind of are, you know, little hitchhikers. So they'll often, when I was doing the home visiting, you know, I would come home sometimes if I'd been in a home and I had seen something, and I would instantly. Poor neighbors. I would be in the garage and just take everything off and throw it in the hot washing machine and just anything to not bring it home. So, you know, that's important to spot things, to address it quickly if somebody spots something. So also educating staff on what the bed bugs themselves look like. There's lots of pictures online that will, you know, show you what they look like in their different stages.
Thank you very much, by the way, for showing them to me just before lunch today. That was very nice of you.
They're not a pretty bug, but that's important because, you know, if you can spot something quickly, you see something in a patient's clothing or notice something in the bed after they leave the surgery center, if you can find out quickly, you can take steps right away to stop any kind of a spread. And that's also to that point. And again, when I was doing home visiting, one of the nurses had opened her bag and had seen what she thought was a bed bug, and it turned out it was. So we had caught it in a little plastic bag. And sometimes, you know, if you're not sure, that can be a way, as long as you have it, you know, sort of escape proof. You don't want to keep it alive in the center, but that way you can have somebody identify it if you're unsure, because, you know, you really want to know what it is.
And all of our centers need to have exterminators on contract in any way. And most of our centers, I believe, have on regular, you know, inspections or visits from the exterminator. So this would be one of those things where, right, when an infestation occurs, you call them right up and bring them out immediately.
Yeah, and even beforehand, I was thinking it might be a good idea. If you live in an area where you are concerned about it, maybe find out what do they want you to do if you think you spot something.
Right.
You know, maybe having sort of a plan of action and a policy for that.
Right. That's a very good point, is because we have been scrambling here because people have, up until this has occurred, we haven't had a standard bed bug policy, but now we do for all of our clients. So we're just in the process of implementing it for everybody. So if you don't have one now, definitely get one. And by the way, we have a policy. Let's post it up on the website. We'll do that.
Yeah. And just, you know, planning ahead for that. As I said, they can't jump, but they can go room to room. They said they can crawl through outlets along the crevices in the floor. They can live for long periods without eating. So you can't sort of starve them out by sealing off the room, but they can be killed by a lot of heat. So washing things in very hot water and a hot dryer, or freezing something if it's just a small thing. Put it in a plastic bag and put it in the freezer for a few days. If you vacuum something, make sure you then seal off all the contents and get rid of that. But, you know, just doing those things on your own are not going to, won't be foolproof. So I would always say contact the exterminator. Get ahead of it before anything happens if you do notice something.
So visit our website. We'll post a policy up there, and hopefully this has given some good advice. So Sue, I'm very excited. We have our tickets all ready to go to the California State Association Conference, and we've been given a room for a day there. Yep. My good friend, the executive director up there, Beth, has prepared everything for us. And so I just thought, since we know that a good 10% of our audience comes from California, just thought I'd give you an update on what is going on. So the conference begins on September 5th. Mm-hmm. And they start with, I love the title of this. Am I running an ambulatory surgery center or a nuclear power plant? High reliability principles come to healthcare. And that's going to be by William Eisenberg, who's an MD. So I'm looking forward to that. Mm-hmm. And then Ridley Barron, who I've heard speak, every half second counts. Now, Ridley unfortunately lost his family as a result of an auto accident, and an auto accident, and then the follow up after. There's very serious issues that happened with the care of his family members afterwards.
I have not heard him speak, but it looks like a really powerful story.
It's sad and it's enlightening. And I just love that, again, the title, Everyone Half Second Counts, because he talks about how it really doesn't take long for, you know, a person's life to change dramatically. Yeah. And then the conference keynote is by Mark Eaton, who is an MBA all-star and author, and he's going to talk about the four commitments of a winning and safe team. And it says, take your team to the next level of success and safety.
Yep, and then the impact of driving surgical cases to the ASC environment by James Robinson and David Cowling. That is actually on September 7th.
And then also on September 7th, Transparency and Patient Outcomes in the ASC Industry by Michelle George, who is a nurse. The conference is wonderful. Please go to the website at casurgery.org. That's casurgery.org. The full conference schedule is up there. So let's talk about some upcoming events in the ASC industry.
Every week, we will inform you of upcoming events. If you would like your event to be included in the podcast, please send the event information to info@ascpodcast.com.
So registration for the CAPE and the CASC exam, the online exams, are during the month of August. So you're running out of time if you want to take the exam in October for either CAPE or CASC. And that exam will be administered at various testing centers throughout the United States during October. So you have until August 31st to sign up for it. To register for the CAPE exam, go to www.aboutcape.org. That's www.aboutcaip.org. And to sign up for the CASC exam, go to www.aboutcasc.org. That is www.aboutcasc.org.
The California Ambulatory Surgery Association CASA Annual Conference, September 5th through 7th, 2018, is in Huntington Beach. We are heading out there to do a special episode.
ASC Association's National Advocacy Day 2018 is September 5th, 2018. For more information and to sign up to visit your congressmen and senators in Washington, D.C., visit the ASC Association website.
The Ohio State Association meeting will be September 18th through the 20th at the Hilton Polaris in Columbus, Ohio.
The Virginia Ambulatory Surgery Association Fall Conference is at the Hilton Garden Inn in Virginia Beach Oceanfront on September 20th.
The Indiana Federation of Ambulatory Surgery Centers 2018 Fall Conference and Trade Show is September 28th at the Ritz-Charles in Carmel, Indiana.
The Pennsylvania Ambulatory Surgery Association annual meeting is October 1st, 2018 at the Sheridan Harrisburg Hershey Hotel in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania.
The New York State Association of ASC's Fall Conference will be held at the Roosevelt Hotel on October 11th, 2018.
The fifth annual New York Metro ASC Symposium is November 2nd, 2018 at the Marriott Marquis in the heart of Times Square.
The CASA Infection Prevention Seminar is November 7th through 8th, 2018 in Casa Mesta.
The 2019 ASCA Winter Seminars are January 17th to the 19th in Austin, Texas at the Hilton Austin. The 2019 conference will include three tracks, ASC Management Essentials, Coding Update and Reimbursement Strategies, and Infection Prevention Techniques and ASCs.
ASCA 2019 will be at the Gaylord Opryland Resort and Convention Center in Nashville, Tennessee, May 15th through the 18th, 2019.
For more information on all of these events, visit our website at ascpodcast.com. Sue, I did realize when I was posting these new things that the calendar was broken, so I created a new calendar. So
okay, good. It's up and running.
So that's it for this edition of the ASC Podcast with John Gailey. Join us again in 2 weeks, and please spread the word about our podcast with your friends and colleagues, and do us the honor of hitting the subscribe button. See you in 2 weeks.
This podcast is an educational and operational tool and is not intended to be a comprehensive resource for all the rules, regulations, and standards that an ambulatory surgery center must meet. The advice provided should not be considered as, nor does it constitute legal advice or opinion. When reviewing specific situations involving legal and regulatory issues, attorneys and other professionals should be consulted. This has been a production of Eden Group Development, all rights reserved. We would like to thank this week's sponsors. First, Ambulatory Healthcare Strategies, one of the nation's leading regulatory compliance and financial oversight firms. For a free consultation, contact John Gailey today at 585-594-1167 or through email at info@ah-strategies.com. And Eden Group Development, which publishes ASC Regulatory Compliance Series, the ASC industry's leading books, including the Survey Guide for ASCs, a guide to the CMS conditions for coverage and interpretive guidelines for ambulatory surgery centers, and Ambulatory Surgery Center Governance, a guide for ambulatory surgery center owners and governing body members. These must-have books are available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble or directly from the publisher at reg-books.com. That's reg-books.com. If you are interested in advertising or sponsoring the ASC Podcast with John Gailey, please email us at info@ascpodcast.com. We would love to hear your questions and comments. Please email us at comments@ascpodcast.com.